This is Building Bridges, your community and labor report, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash. A Saint on Death Row, the story of Dominique Green, with Archbishop Desmond Tutu.
Well, there have been more than 1,000 executions in the United States since the death penalty was reinstated in 1976, leading the nation with 435 executions, 12 of which have been carried out this year, is Texas. Dominique Green, a 30-year-old African-American, was executed on Texas death row.
His story is told by best-selling author Thomas Cahill, who wrote the tremendously moving book, A Saint on Death Row, The Story of Dominique Green, and by Archbishop Emeritus of Cape Town, South Africa's Desmond Tutu. Both continue to raise the cry for the abolition of the death penalty.
Thank you so much, people of Riverside Church. When I was a child, I spoke as a child, I understood as a child, I thought as a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things. These words of the Apostle Paul in his first letter to the Corinthians. But what if you were never allowed to be a child? If as far back as you could remember, your life was a life of sadness, deprivation, and horror. How do you put away childish things if you've never had the chance to play? How do you become a man, as Paul says? How do you grow up if you've never had the chance to be a child? Many psychologists would say that unless you have been allowed to be a child, to play, to babble, to explore, to try things out while feeling parental admiration and the encompassing envelope of parental love, you cannot successfully negotiate the transition from childhood to adolescence and from adolescence to adulthood. The principal destroyer of childhood is brutality. Sometimes brutality descends in the form of bombs from the air that can wipe out houses and parents, children older and children younger, leaving perhaps one small, perhaps mangled child to cope alone with a bombed out life. This is what happened recently to many children who live in the Gaza Strip between Israel and Egypt. What kind of adults will such children become? Crippled inwardly and outwardly, they're likely to be either excessively timid, fearful people, or hateful, brutal people. And who could blame them for becoming something less than they would have been had they been allowed a normal course of development? Sometimes brutality hits a child more privately, less dramatically, but just as effectively as a bomb. When it comes in the form of a parent who demeans and belittles a child, a parent who takes out the frustrations of adult life on a helpless child, a parent who constantly humiliates, beats, and even tortures the helpless body of a child. If such a child survives childhood, and many do not, he or she is only too likely to grow up to be another humiliator, another beater, another torturer, and so continues through time from one generation to the next, the dreadful syndrome of man's inhumanity to man. Not a few of the children who have never had a childhood grow up to be lawbreakers, who sooner or later find themselves in prison. Rather than taking the trouble to intervene effectively in the lives of such abused children and rescue them, we as a society often just wait till they are old enough to break the law. Then we lock them up. How creative of us. How mean and unforgiving. Let me tell you about a friend of mine, Dominique Green. Dominique spent his teen years as a petty mugger and sometime drug pusher. Finally, having just turned 18, he was tried for capital murder, convicted, and sentenced to death in the state of Texas. Was Dominique guilty of murder? I don't think so. I think he was just guilty of being an abused kid who had no resources to protect him from the charges made by a district attorney who wanted a conviction and didn't care how he got it. When Dominique was picked up by the police, he had been living for 3 years in a storage bin that he rented with his drug money. Why was Dominique living in a storage bin from the age of 15? Because his parents had abandoned him. This after years of torture by a mother who used to hold Dominique's right hand over the gas flame when she disapproved of something he had done. Dominique's father was a drug addict, his mother was an alcoholic and prostitute. She was also schizophrenic and had multiple personalities, some of them harrowing. Over the 12 years Dominique spent on death row, he blossomed into a beautiful human being, a wholly functioning adult. He became a legal expert and was constantly helping other inmates with their cases. He became an avid reader and student, an excellent writer, and even an editor who created a fascinating anthology of prisoners' writings. One book that especially impressed Dominique was a book by Desmond Tutu, the retired Archbishop of Cape Town, South Africa. The book was entitled No Future Without Forgiveness, and it's about Archbishop Tutu's experiences as chairman of South Africa's unique experiment, the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, during whose sessions perpetrators of political violence were encouraged to tell the truth about what they had done in the course of the apartheid era, and the victims of that violence and their families were encouraged to forgive those who repented of their violence. Dominique was deeply impressed by the book and realized that this was the path he and his fellow inmates must take. He pressed the Archbishop's book on anyone who would have it. Under Dominique's leadership, many, perhaps most, of the inmates on death row in the state of Texas forgave everyone who had harmed them, and insofar as they could, asked forgiveness from those they had harmed. Dominique believed he had a vocation to inspire the kids who turn up on death row to drop their petty hatreds and to morph into larger, more generous human beings. In the same way that older inmates since executed once provided spiritual models for him to follow. In my first meeting with Dominique, I was able to tell him that Archbishop Tutu was a friend of mine. I doubt anything else I could possibly have said would have impressed him so much, and he wanted me to tell him everything I knew about the great man. Dominique and I spent much of our conversation admiring the sublime courage of Desmond Tutu, who with his wonderful wife, Leah, and their four children had lived for decades under the constant threat of assassination, yet never failed to speak the truth boldly to those who did not wish to hear it. Everyone here tonight and the whole world, your grace, is permanently in your debt. The Archbishop visited Dominique, a visit of incalculable importance to Dominique, who said afterwards, "To think Archbishop Tutu came here. Nobody thinks we're anything, but he came all the way from South Africa." Dominique spoke these words moments before his own execution, an execution that went forward despite the fact that the widow of the man he supposedly murdered and the man's sons all pleaded publicly that Dominique's life be spared. This plea was sent as a videotape to Rick Perry, the governor of Texas, and to the members of the Texas Board of Pardons and Paroles. The governor was determined to execute more prisoners than his predecessor, George W. Bush, whose number of executions on a per-year basis remains virtually unequaled in American history. Texas, oh Texas, you who execute so many people each year that you have put the United States in the same execution league as the most repressive regimes on earth. According to the best estimates, 1 in 8 of all convictions in this country is the conviction of an innocent person. But when it comes to Texas, no statistician would even hazard a guess as to how many innocents are being convicted of crimes. In this year of 2009, Texas has already executed 12 people, while all other states taken together have executed only 7. Dominique Green's was just one of so many needless, heedless, unjust Texas executions. His last words to his many supporters as he lay strapped to the cross-shaped gurney, just before the poison stopped his heart, were these: "I am not angry, but I am disappointed that I was denied justice. But I am happy that I was afforded you all as family and friends. You all have been there for me. It's a miracle. I love you all. Please just keep the struggle going. Thanks for allowing me to touch so many hearts. I never knew I could do it, but you made it possible. You all are my family. Please keep my memory alive." Dominique Green is not dead and gone. Dominique Green, abused child, abandoned teenager, condemned adult, opened his heart and believed the good news. Archbishop Desmond Tutu.
It's wonderful to be in this place of worship, which holds such wonderful memories about the role of Riverside Church in our struggle against apartheid. And of course, who can forget when this great place welcomed the newly released Nelson Mandela. Thank you for having been there for us. This country has inspired many around the world. It certainly inspired us in South Africa. When they introduced an inferior system of education for black people, which eventually led to the Soweto uprising of 1976, there were some things that they said we should not be taught, we black people. We were not allowed to be taught anything about the American War of Independence, because they said, why want to introduce subversive thoughts into the minds of our black people? The minister responsible for us said famously, why do you want to teach black people mathematics? What are they going to do with mathematics? Let them learn enough English and Afrikaans, which is the other official language, to be able to understand instructions given by their white employers. So our children, we were meant to be consigned to perpetual serfdom. And what happened in this country was always a source of inspiration. When I was 8 years or so of age, I picked up a tattered copy of Ebony magazine. And it was talking about Brooklyn Dodgers and Jackie Robinson breaking into Major League Baseball. I didn't know baseball from ping pong. But that didn't matter. It just was that I grew inches to know that someone who looked like me could overcome such great obstacles. Then I remember in the one cinema in one town serving black people from all along Johannesburg, what is called the Reef. The film that we saw was stormy weather. I don't know whether it was a good film or not. I don't care. Because for us to go to a movie and see black people like us acting, I fell head over heels in love with Lena Horne. And for a long time in our township, you saw guys talked out as if they were Cap Galloway and Fats Waller and all of those people. It was an incredible thing for us. So you see some of us who looked to this land with incredible admiration, and your civil rights movement inspired us no end. We also had a dream. We also sang in our struggle, we shall overcome. Things that were inspiring us at a time when we were being roughed up. And so it was a kind of disillusionment, a pain that to know that the land that we aspired after what was happening here, that this land had this huge blot on it that you believed. I'm using this in a generic sense, okay? I don't mean you. You are on the right side. that you believed in the death penalty. And then you've heard all of the wonderful things that the Texas Coalition have been trying to say. I mean, the fact that Tom didn't say, that there clearly was a miscarriage of justice in the case of Dominic, because one of the guys who was with them, white, did not appear in court. And Tom has told you what happened to Dominic, how he was an incredible young man for trying to protect his younger siblings from his mother's quite callous attacks, the burning or holding of his hands over a flame and stabbing her cigarette ends into his palms. Why do you do this when you are such lovely people? Why? If you wanted to apply for membership of the European Union, the United States would not qualify because the European Union demands that its members abolish capital punishment. Why do you continue when you have been given incontrovertible evidence that huge mistakes are made, that so frequently innocent people are convicted, often because they have such inadequate legal defense? In one instance where the judge rebuked a lawyer who was representing a black guy on capital charges because he was asleep during the proceedings. And you know, there is a university, I don't know which, you have so many, whose law school has this incredible project. They have helped to prove innocent I don't know how many people were, especially in rape cases, where they've been able to prove conclusively through DNA that this could not be the culprit. Why do you continue? Because this is a mistake you won't be able to correct. I mean, once you have executed a person, you have executed them. Tough luck, tough luck. We made a mistake, man. You can't get him back. Why? Why? Why, when you're such an incredible country? I mean, look at what we've done. In November the 4th, look at what you did. Hey? Why do you do this? For most of us who are Christians, we have a different injunction. Do you know what it is doing to you? It is brutalizing. You might say, no, it doesn't really affect me. But it is brutalizing you. So that what happened in Alabama, 16 people, this country where you have the right to carry a gun. Last night I was speaking in Chicago, invited by the Chicago Bar Association, because how many kids have been killed? What are you doing to yourselves? What are you doing to yourselves, you wonderful, generous people? What are you doing to yourselves? You're brutalizing yourselves. You're cautioning yourselves. Please, please, you are such a fantastic bunch of human beings. You really are, actually. You are some of the most... No. I am not looking for anything from you just now. You are some of the most generous people in the world. What are you doing to yourselves? Because you know, whether you like it or not, you are part of that system, and it's turning you into violent people. It's turning you into violent people. Please, please, for your own sakes, but really for the sake of the world, allow that better side of you, your generosity, your compassion, with things that, please, 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 you would not be so quick to bomb on the basis of a lie. You destroyed Iraq on the basis of a lie. Because you have come to begin to believe that force, that violence would be the answers. No. Gentleness, compassion, love. Love. How what are we going to make our world a better place? I can just see Dominic, I was sitting across from him. He is the most eloquent reason for the abolition of the death penalty. He was sitting over there, and I really was awed by him. He had a gentle smile. I sat there and said, no. How could we kill this guy? And you say? You see, you're saying it is because you want to show your reverence for life by taking a life. We don't do that. It's one of the greatest obscenities. Please know that they are making you an obscene nation. If someone rapes, do you, in order to show how opposed you are to rape him in return? Why do you do it with killing? Is it because you have killed? And don't think, that those who say abolish the death penalty mean that you've got to be lenient. No. 30 years life imprisonment is rough. But at least you still give the person the chance to be rehabilitated. You don't give up on anyone.
Abolish the death penalty. Dominic Green executed on Texas death row.
The story of Dominic Green with Archbishop Desmond Tutu.
Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our new website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.